Hi, it's Melissa Cohen, the creator of the Relationship Roadmap, and this is session number two. In this lesson, we're going to talk about the sharp corners of your love triangle. And by that, I mean the triangle of love between you, your spouse, and your child. Life may not be as glamorous as a soap opera or reality TV, but after the birth of your child, you will be embroiled in quite a dramatic love triangle. Originally, it was you and your partner. And although you may not think about it on a daily basis, you have chosen to be devoted to each other. Although you may have had your ups and downs and continue to have ups and downs, you feel pretty good knowing that your partner chose you above all others. When you become parents, though, that devotion shifts. Suddenly, you fall in love with someone else, and you have to incorporate that new person into the relationship between the two of you. So, you still love your partner, but the new love of your life consumes all of your attention and energy. And of course, your partner is also in love with this newcomer. So, you both love the baby, and you both love each other. And someday the baby might love you, but for right now, the baby needs you. And that need is all-consuming. So how you and your partner deal with the baby's needs can spur discontentment within your love triangle. Before we get into how this can be quite a pothole for you guys to either avoid or go gently through, I want to just say from the outset that I know that all parents love their children, they love their spouses, but focusing all of your emotional energy on your children at the expense of your relationship actually sabotages the family that you're trying to create in the long run. Your happy family is based on the relationship between the parents. So neglecting that is basically like trying to build a house but with no foundation to build upon. Focusing on your relationship and keeping your marriage strong actually gives kids a sense of security in their parents' love for each other and for themselves. Focusing on your marriage also allows you to be a good role model. Your children are learning how to be in a relationship by watching you. You, the parents, are the ultimate role model for their children, and you need to be able to teach them how a successful relationship works. Also, prioritizing your child at all times leads to a sense of what I call entitlementitis that we want to avoid, where the children feel that their needs should come first all the time, no matter what. And that simply isn't true. There are many times in which, of course, we take our children's needs into consideration, but sometimes their needs are secondary to what the parents need or want to do. Okay, let's look at the ways in which this can show up in a relationship. So as with most of these modules, I'm going to take you through some examples, often starting out with the issues that come up when raising infants all the way up through raising children through their teenage years. When you first bring a baby home, whether it's your first child or later children, there is always going to be a period of adjustment to make room for this new person in your family. The mother is often the parent who takes off more time in the first months of a baby's life. So combine this with the head start to parenting we discussed in module one, she, instead of her spouse, naturally becomes aligned and attuned with the baby. So the father, who used to only be a husband, can feel like the odd man out, which is, of course, unusual for a person to experience when they're going from a two-person relationship to a three-person or larger. Now, again, a lot of this is not necessarily conscious. He may begin to unconsciously react to the feeling of being replaced by the children as the object of his wife's attention and affection. And to manage this feeling, he needs to figure out how he fits in. As strange as it may sound, even a simple thing like rejoining the family after being away all day can be a sticky situation when this triangulation is in effect. So something as simple as
when the father comes home from work, he's so eager to see the baby after being separated all day that he focuses on the baby but forgets to connect with his wife. This can lead to the mother feeling rejected on some level. On the flip side, if the father comes home and doesn't seem eager or interested in spending time with the children, the mother may experience a vicarious sense of rejection. She may be deeply hurt by the thought of her husband not being as equally in love with their baby as she is. And again, this is not necessarily a conscious process. However, it does become an issue in many relationships where the coming back together after the end of the day can be a real hot spot for conflict. Here's an example of how this conflict can play out. We'll use a fictitious couple called Michael and Jennifer. So they have a daughter, and let's call her Sophia. If the daughter is awake, Michael is eager to spend a few moments with her before she goes to bed because he feels guilty whenever he doesn't get to see her in the evenings. However, if Sophia is asleep, he wants to reconnect with his wife, Jennifer, by telling her all about his day at work. Jennifer tries to be supportive as she listens, but she's exhausted by the end of the day and doesn't have much empathy for his struggles. After all, in her mind, when Michael is at work, he is surrounded by adults and has intellectually stimulating interactions. He gets to sometimes go for expensive lunches. It makes her feel like his life hasn't changed very much, while her life as a new stay-at-home mom is unrecognizable. So although Jennifer's heart warms at the idea that Michael is so excited to see Sophia at the end of the day, she feels somewhat neglected that he doesn't seem interested in her experience of her new work as a stay-at-home mom. Michael isn't particularly interested in hearing about the minutiae of how many ounces Sophia ate or how many minutes she napped. She experiences Michael's disinterest as an emotional distancing. And therefore, Jennifer doesn't share with him how she's really feeling about her daily life. Being home all day with Sophia, she often feels trapped. Her days are unpredictable and monotonous at the same time. So she focuses on the minutiae to cope with the loss of control that she feels in her life. So because there is this triangulation going on, we needed to bring all of these issues to the surface so that they could reconnect after they each have a long day at their various works and really strengthen the relationship as they move on through the next days and weeks. Another pattern that I see with couples who have young children is surrounding bedtime and, in general, getting their kids to sleep through the night. So one example of the triangulation is allowing children to sleep in the marital bed or having a parent fall asleep with the children in their beds or in their bedrooms. Couples become so desperate to get their kids to sleep that they sacrifice bonding time that they could be having with their spouse. This also fosters a situation where there are very few boundaries between the couple and their children in terms of privacy. If a child is used to sleeping in the bed with his or her parents, then the marital bed actually becomes a family bed and not a space that is reserved as a sanctuary just for the couple. And that can really deteriorate a feeling of connection between the spouses in the bedroom. This can lead to a disruption of intimacy within the relationship, because if the marital bed becomes a family bed, there is very little opportunity for the couple to be intimate with each other, and their bedroom in general becomes a place that is associated with the children, not with each other. It amazes me how many couples I work with who refuse to put a lock on their bedroom door because the children might need them. And they're quite resistant to the idea of putting a lock on the bedroom door, which I, of course, always suggest. They say things like, oh, but what if my child needs me? What if, you know, my child wants to come in and can't? And the reality is, if your child needs you, they will have no problem making that known, either by crying or calling out your name, depending on their age. And if they're walking, they can obviously come to the door and try to get in, and then you will know. But not having a lock on the bedroom door really puts a strain on the relationship, because there's no time to feel secure that you can be with your spouse alone. As your children grow, these issues of triangulation may take different shapes, but it continues throughout the journey. Let me give you another example of how this pattern can play out with older children. So a couple that I treat, let's call them Nancy and Henry, they both work outside of the home. The children are older. They're in their elementary school years. And they are noticing that the later that the children stay up, the less time they have to invest in the marriage on a daily basis. It used to be when the kids would go to bed at 7 o'clock, they had the whole rest of the evening to really eat dinner together and spend time winding down together and connecting in order to face the new day. Now they find that they really only have about an hour of time alone between when the last child goes to sleep and when they themselves go to sleep. That's why it's so important to create opportunities to connect with each other to keep the love flowing between you. So much of my work with Nancy and Henry was to look at how their day goes and to see where we could find moments for connection for them. In the morning, it was way too chaotic to get both parents and the kids off to school to really connect in the morning. It was really a hot spot and everybody just needed to be in doing mode, not really connecting mode. So I suggest that they have a mid-morning phone call just to check in with each other, to take a breath, to see how each of their mornings is going so far. It gives them an opportunity to share what challenges they're facing, what victories or accomplishments they want to celebrate, and any scheduling issues that might come up so that when they reunite in the evening, they know how to support each other. They know how the day was going and what the issues are that they need to discuss in the short amount of time that they actually have together. Another point that was one in which feelings sort of got hurt a lot was, again, how to reunite when they both came home from work. They were both exhausted, both wanted to be, you know, with the kids and with each other, but there's only so much to go around. So what I suggested to them was that when the last person comes home, depending on the day, it was either Nancy or Henry, I suggested that the spouses meet each other with a hug and a kiss and just really hug each other tight and just breathe in and out together, a deep breath for just a couple of seconds. This gives a feeling of being welcomed home, helping to make the transition from focusing on the external demands of work to focusing on the home life. I also suggested that they schedule a weekly sitter so that they could have couples time. And this couples time is important. Even if you can't schedule a sitter, even if you don't have the money or the childcare coverage to go out, it was important for them to have a date night on the weekend, even if it was just sitting on the couch, just, you know, watching a movie together or just catching up with each other. It was important to have that time set aside so that it didn't get scheduled over. Once implementing all of these interventions that I mentioned, they actually felt closer together. Even though each of these things really only takes, you know, about 10 minutes a day, that 10 minutes of connecting throughout the day at these pressure points really helped them to feel that when they came home at the end of the day, they were ready to connect. It's almost like they were primed to know what the other person needed. And once they were given permission to have a date night without actually having to go out, it was amazing how the excuses fell away. They simply made a list of movies that they wanted to watch on Netflix, and that was their Saturday evening ritual. They would pop popcorn, open a beautiful bottle of wine, and sit on the couch and watch a movie that they'd really been wanting to see together. Just that, just connecting over that, actually counts as a date night. And it's important for all of us to realize that date night doesn't have to be a big deal, but it is critical that at least once a week you have a moment to connect with your spouse uninterrupted by any external demands, including your own children. This is so important because I talk to so many couples who have become exhausted by the demands of the life that they have set up for themselves, that they have no energy left for each other. One stay-at-home mom that I treat, she's a mother of three, and she described it as the feeling of being so focused on the demands of parenting. She called it the burden of her love. She says she's too burned out to get off the couch and connect with her husband when he comes home. She just wants to veg out watching her show for an hour and then go to bed. And look, she of course deserves to recharge her battery, as does her husband. But imagine how her husband must feel after working all day to support his family, and then he's virtually ignored when he comes home. Likewise, I work with fathers who want to reconnect with their kids in the few moments they have with them in the evenings that they don't take time to connect with their wives. And often these wives feel like the mother of his children instead of his wife. So the problem is when you are this burned out, it's almost impossible to give and receive love in the way that you both deserve. And again, if you are burnt out, it really is time to pull over and pop the hood and see what is going on. So let's look at burnout in general. I define burnout as an emptiness inside. If you're burned out, you have like emotional hunger pains that you feel helpless to satisfy. You feel like you're just going through the motions. Now, being tired is a component of burnout, but you can be tired without being burnt out. Sadness and worry may also be components of burnout, but it's not a clinical depression. It's a milder, everyday unhappiness. It's the melancholy of a mundane life. People who suffer from burnout typically have very high standards for themselves, and they may have difficulty relaxing in general. Instead, they tend to overschedule themselves and multitask on top of their hectic schedule. Physically, those prone to burnout have a very tense posture, using more muscles than necessary to complete any given task. For example, shrugging your shoulders or tensing your jaw without realizing you're doing so. Emotionally, burnout sufferers are often hostile and driven by a sense of obligation rather than their own wishes. So as you go through your daily life, stop and check in with yourself. How are you feeling physically and emotionally? Do you feel scattered all the time? Are you noticing that you're gripping your muscles? Are you finding it difficult to slow down long enough just to check in with yourself? As you notice your feelings, consider your needs and your wants. Have you been so concerned with everyone else's needs all day that you don't take a moment for yourself? Do you remember the last time you were doing something just for yourself, something when time flew by in a really good way? Now that you've checked in with yourself, let's look at how we can avoid burnout. Many of us have been so accustomed to saying yes to everyone else's need that we don't realize it's at the expense of ourselves. We don't consider what we really value, and therefore we don't make choices that reflect that value. Eventually, this results in a life that does not feel very fulfilling. You may have heard this saying that an unexamined life is not worth living. I don't know if it's not worth living, but it's certainly not very satisfying. If you've been on autopilot like this for a while, come back to yourself by contemplating how you really want your life to be. Feel free to let your mind wander and allow possibilities to consider. It's a good idea to write your thoughts down. Nothing formal, just jot them down. Of course, we all have obligations that need to be tended to. This list is really just a way for you to figure out what it is that you would like to incorporate into your life in the time where you're not meeting other people's needs. So many people don't really think about this, and so they don't take the time to really nourish themselves and recharge their battery. Instead, when they're given a moment where they have empty space, all they really want to do is rest. And rest is important, obviously, especially if you're in the early years of parenting where you're not getting much sleep. But rest does not necessarily recharge the battery. So in this list, I really want you to think about things that really nourish your soul, really re-energize you, something that you love to do, even if it's just sitting quietly reading a book. It's something that's just for you, where you don't have to meet the demands of anyone else. The other thing I want you to consider is how often you're on autopilot, not really making conscious choices. So a conscious choice has three components. First, you know what you want or value. Second, you know the potential cost. And third, you accept the price. So for example, saying yes to baking a cake for your daughter's birthday instead of buying one at the store means saying no to an hour spent otherwise, like relaxing or reconnecting with your spouse or friends or family. For some, usually those who like to bake, this price is acceptable. But for others, saying yes without considering that the hour of relaxation or reconnection is more value to them, they say yes, but then they feel resentful and more exhausted after completing the task. So once you get clear on what you really want and what you really value, start living with those desires and values in mind. Ask yourself as you make decisions, will this get me closer to the feeling that I want or farther away? While it may sound simplistic, it's not very easy. It requires brutal honesty with yourself. Making the best choice requires courage and discipline. Start with small things like the birthday cake dilemma. You'll see that by aligning your values and your actions, the feeling of burnout or emptiness will fade, leaving a space for you to include things that will really help you to feel better and leave you with a sense of satisfaction and contentment in place of the emptiness. The years we spend parenting is a great time of vulnerability for both you and your partner. Both partners are exhausted, very emotional, unsure of themselves. However, this period can also be a time of bonding, not just with the children, but as a couple, if you remember that you're on the same team and you're there to support each other. I hope you'll spend some time really looking at ways that you can connect with your partner in these small little rituals of connection, and that you also take time just for yourself to contemplate if you're on autopilot and how you can sort of pull over, reassess, and start aligning your choices with what is really most important to you. It may sound harsh, but if you want to make it through this journey of parenthood, still loving each other on the other side of it, you do kind of have to think of you and your partner as the us and the children as the them. And eventually, they will leave the nest and you will be together alone again. So I hope this session helps you to understand this unconscious love triangle going on, has given you some ideas for some small rituals of connection that you can implement throughout your days and weeks, and that if you are feeling burned out, you have some idea of where to start to get off the autopilot and start really engaging in your life again in a way that feels good to you.
I know this was a lot of information, and I thank you for sticking with me. Again, the real work takes place on the worksheets, so make sure that you put a lot of time and energy into that. I want to thank you for putting forth the effort that you already have to make your relationship stronger. Take good care of yourself and each other, and I will see you on the next lesson.